war really is not just about North Korea. It's about North Korea and Iran. We have to keep that in perspective as we all sit here and discuss Alaska.
Senator Begich questions defense officials on cuts to Fort Greely. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 17th of June. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new federal report on the reach of climate change.
Finally, the U.S. government is leveling with the American people about the dire future we all face from ignoring global warming so long.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
Former state lawmakers Pete Cott and Vic Coring are free to travel without asking for permission from a judge. The two were released from federal prison last week. The Justice Department says their trials were tainted because their lawyers were not given evidence that might have helped them convince juries they were not guilty of corruption charges. Today, they were in the same courtroom facing the same judge who sentenced them. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
U.S. District Court Judge John Sedgwick sent Pete Cott to prison in late 2007 and Vic Coring to prison the following spring. Now he has released them on bail and granted their request to travel without his approval. A new team of federal prosecutors told the judge they've made several shipments of evidence to their attorneys and will complete that process by the end of July. The two were both convicted of taking bribes from Bill Allen, former owner of Vico Incorporated, to influence the progress of legislation that changed the way oil companies are taxed. Cott said he's got no plans right now, but is enjoying his freedom. He lost weight during his time in prison. Cott pleads poverty and says he wants a court-appointed attorney. Jim Wendt, who represented him at trial, was allowed to withdraw. Coring's attorney, John Henry Brown, was actively involved and has already said if there is a new trial, he'll ask for a new judge. The Justice Department prosecutors have been replaced by Jim Trustee and Peter Costi, accompanied by acting U.S. Attorney Karen Loeffler. Trustee said he was still getting up to speed. An internal probe of the handling of the Cott and Coring cases, along with the case of former U.S. Senator Ted Stevens, is still going on. A second probe is being done by an independent prosecutor for Judge Emmett Sullivan, who presided over the Stevens trial. Brown complained to Judge Sedgwick the federal prosecutors had not given him an affidavit that came up during the Stevens trial. In it, Agent Chad Joy charged that Special Agent Mary Beth Kepner, who spearheaded the federal corruption probe, had become too close with Bill Allen. The new prosecutor, Jim Trustee, said that would be delivered to Brown. Sedgwick gave both sides until the end of August to come up with motions about what he ought to do next in the case. There was no indication from prosecutors about whether they will ask for new trials. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
A new report from the federal government takes a stark look at the current impacts of global warming in the United States. Violent storms, drought, and flooding are just a few climate change effects already documented across the country. And the report anticipates much more disastrous consequences in the future. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
There isn't any new science on global warming in the report. Instead, it captures a lot of the best research on the topic and digests it into simple writing and graphs that pack a dramatic punch. Jeff Short is a scientist with Oceana. He applauds the final product, but says it's inexcusable. It wasn't released 5 years ago.
Finally, the U.S. government is leveling with the American people about the dire future we all face from ignoring global warming so long.
In Alaska, that future is likely to include more of what the state is already experiencing, like melting permafrost, displaced fisheries, and increasing coastal storms. Under the worst-case scenario, the report predicts the state's average temperature will rise another 10 degrees by 2090. John Walsh is a University of Alaska professor who's an author of the report. He says that scale of warming would have severe implications.
One of the works that's cited in the Alaska chapter is the research by Glenn Judeh, which shows that the health of the forests in interior Alaska has been declining for the past century. And if that decline continues, if it gets worse, basically the forests are at risk. At least the forests as we know them are at risk.
Interior lakes are also at risk. Many have already evaporated as the air and ground have warmed. Sarah James is an environmental activist with the Gwich'in Steering Committee, who lives in Arctic Village in the far northeast corner of the state. She's documented the vanishing lakes and other dramatic additions to the landscape.
Cottonwood tree is down the street, down the road from me. And that's really strange. And then we never have beaver. Now beaver is something that we have here.
A drier, hotter interior is also leading to more severe insect outbreaks and wildfires. For another contributor to the report, UAF Professor Dave McGuire, the wildfire threat is the most concerning. He lived in Fairbanks during the 2004 and 2005 fire seasons, among the worst on record.
I certainly have a very vivid memory of how nasty that was. And if that became the norm, I knew a lot of people that said, well, if it's going to be like this every summer, I'm not going to be staying in Alaska.
But the scariest results of global warming probably aren't documented in the report. McGuire says there are plenty of unknowns, the surprises scientists haven't yet even considered. That could include extreme events on the scale of Hurricane Katrina.
I think those are the kind of surprises that we're kind of concerned about that we might not recognize.
But UAF's John Walsh says it's important to remember that the impacts from global warming aren't all bad.
A longer summer season brings some opportunities. Agriculture, tourism, the outdoor construction season, for example, will be longer than in the past. So there are opportunities that can be taken advantage of.
The report says the U.S. can respond to global warming by reducing greenhouse gas emissions or by working to adapt to the changes. Walsh says he thinks at this point, counting on emissions falling enough to make a difference is a dicey proposition. Still, Congress is considering a bill right now that attempts to reduce carbon output by more than 80% by 2050. Oceana's Jeff Short says it's time for the U.S. to make a commitment.
This is not going to be easy, and it's not going to be cheap. But if we fail to act, we are going to ensure catastrophe into the future, and replacement planets are extraordinarily expensive.
In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Rat Island in the Aleutians may almost be considered rat-free, but spreading poison there might have had unintended consequences. When seven U.S. Fish and Wildlife biologists returned to the area this summer, they didn't find any live rats, but they did find 186 gulls and 41 dead bald eagles. Fish and Wildlife spokesman Bruce Woods says the bird die-off is uncommonly high, but they can't say for sure if it was linked to the rodenticide. The biologists sent samples of both the gulls and the eagles to labs for testing to determine the cause of death.
The bird carcasses have all been used to produce tissue samples to go to the lab, and then the remaining carcasses have been destroyed to eliminate any further possibility of contamination if the rodenticide is implicated in this die-off.
Neither the eagles nor the gulls commonly eat live rats, but both scavenge for meat. Woods says the poison pellets spread on the island last fall have been used to eradicate rats on other islands around the world and have not had this effect before. He says they tested the poison in the Aleutians as well.
And we did do some preliminary testing of our own in some of the smaller islands off Adak. And in those testing, we determined by radio tagging rats that more than 80% of the rats died underground in their holes, and we had no eagle deaths in those tests either.
Wood says the bald eagle and glaucous wing gull populations are healthy in the region. Only the juvenile bald eagle population seems lower than average. The Fish and Wildlife Service worked with the Nature Conservancy and Island Conservation on the $2.5 million project to eradicate the rats and allow birds to repopulate the island. The rats jumped from a sinking Japanese ship onto the island more than 220 years ago and quickly took over the entire area, feasting on bird eggs and young. Biologists will stay on the island to study the bird nesting success and to look for more evidence of rats.
And of course, as the birds nest, that will be another period when, if there are any rats present, they might become more visible because the rats prey on bird eggs and on immature birds.
The biologists are also taking water, soil, and bird scat samples to test for further presence of the poison. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a summer school program that teaches Native culture and language along with the basics.
And Kanchatik, it means how are you?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Senator Mark Begich is continuing to press his case for blocking cuts to the missile defense program at Fort Greely in Delta Junction. Begich questioned top defense officials yesterday, including the head of the missile defense program, at an Armed Services Committee hearing. President Obama has proposed cutting the fiscal year 2010 missile defense budget for the ground-based system by 35%. The administration wants to stop construction of a missile field at Fort Greely. Begich questioned the logic of that and asked what signal it's sending to the rest of the world. He noted North Korea has ramped up its missile tests in recent months.
40% of them have occurred since we announced the budget preparation in regards to the missile defense system in Alaska. In other words, stopping the missile defense system at the level it is at today. Almost 40% of their tests have occurred since that date, which is kind of an interesting, maybe it's coincidence, but it adds to me at least an additional risk factor.
Deputy Defense Secretary William Lynn said he believes the current missile defense system is adequate and can be expanded when needed. He said while North Korea is very unpredictable, there is intelligence on its actual capabilities.
They are well within the bounds of a 30-missile field, and we would be able to expand the field far faster than they could expand their capability. So the risk in terms of their having some kind of breakout is not there. We have the ability to respond, to turn inside anything they could do. That has nothing to do with their predictability. That has to do with understanding of their capabilities.
Senator Begich pressed the point that the Alaska-based missile defense system is supposed to also help protect the U.S. and its allies against other countries, not just North Korea. He told the Director of Missile Defense, Lieutenant General Patrick O'Reilly, that the missile defense response against Iran is limited, but O'Reilly countered that assumption.
Sir, it is not limited. You have very good coverage against Iran from Alaska.
I don't want to say I said that on purpose, but I appreciate you saying that now, because you have just done what exactly my point is, and that is Fort Greeley is not just about North Korea. It's about North Korea and Iran. We have to keep that in perspective as we all sit here and discuss Alaska.
Earlier this month, Senator Begich met with Defense Secretary Robert Gates to Fort Greeley. Elders in Bethel arrived in force at the city council's last meeting to ask the community for help funding the Bethel Senior Center. Bethel's native tribe says high energy costs are eroding services to the area's oldest population. Shane Iverson from member station KYUK in Bethel has more.
Elders gave more public testimony than the council has heard in some time. Elder Catherine Peters cut right to the chase.
We need lots of money. Money, honey. That's what we need.
Peters was the third of eight elders to speak. Before her, Jenny Daisy testified. At age 87, Daisy said the center is a vital part of her life.
Senior Center is like a pal to me. I'm all by myself, and I depend on Senior Center.
The center is owned and operated by Bethel's native tribe, the Okhotsagagamut Native Council. ONC's acting executive director, Gloria Simeon, said that high fuel prices are affecting every facet of their operation.
The money is not going as far. We haven't received any increases in our funding from the state of Alaska. And at the same time, last winter, we were looking at super high utility costs with the fuel and the electricity and the ripple effect onto food.
Over the years, ONC has responded to a tighter budget by keeping wages level. But Simeon says as inflation soars in rural Alaska, that has put them at a major disadvantage for keeping help.
We haven't been competitive in holding our staff.
That's created a revolving door of employees. When positions go vacant, services are cut. The senior center provides social interaction for many elders. They serve lunch and take bus rides to the post office and grocery stores. Helena Williams takes advantage of those services. Williams told the Bethel City Council that those services are essential to many.
I saw lots of helpless people when I go to senior center every day.
The elders' timing was impeccable. They showed up at council the very night they were finalizing their budget for the next year. By a vote of 4-2, the council inserted $50,000 for the senior center. Council member Hugh Diamond said that it wasn't enough to solve their funding woes, but it could help a little and it could help get others on board.
As organizations, we do talk a lot about how much the elders mean to us, and it's time for us to put our money where our mouth is and really do something productive and real for our elders.
Simeon says she will be asking other nonprofits in the Bethel region to dig into their wallets also.
The city is going to be a part of the solution to ONC's budget gap, but it's not the solution.
ONC will be organizing a meeting this summer in hopes of getting more assistance. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
The proposed ban on discrimination based on sexual orientation once again drew hundreds to the Anchorage Assembly and a second night of public testimony, KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
For the most part, the themes of the speakers duplicated last week's testimony. So did the emotional level. Like many speaking against the ordinance, Timothy Davies, pastor of South Anchorage's Chapel by the Sea, balked at the idea of putting sexual orientation on the same level as religion when it comes to anti-discrimination protection.
Sexual preference can never compare with a religion as an essential to our survival as a civilization.
Others opposing the expansion of anti-discrimination protection argued sexual orientation was purely a matter of personal choice, not biology. Several of those backing the proposed amendment said science has shown it is biology. Elizabeth Brandt said even if it would be choice, that's not a reason to exclude sexual orientation.
If a homosexual should be denied their basic rights and protection against discrimination because we are not born gay, then religion must also be a choice, since humans are also not born with a certain religion.
The Anchorage Municipal Charter currently bans discrimination based on race, color, gender, national origin, age, physical or mental disability, religion, and marital status. There are currently three versions of the proposed ordinance before the Assembly. One version would exempt owner-occupied fourplexes and smaller units from having to rent to gay or lesbian tenants, as well as exempt the employment protection in home-based businesses. It would also continue the church's right to reject membership or employment to anyone whose sexual orientation conflicts with their beliefs. Business owner Jeremy Reynolds disputed sexual orientation discrimination existed in most Anchorage workplaces.
Do I have gays and lesbians working for me? You betcha. Yes. I'm proud to say I'm a business that has one of the most diverse employees in the community. I treat all employees with respect and have a true open-door policy.
Reynolds says he fears lawsuits by rejected gays or lesbian job seekers. He was asked how that differed from an African-American applicant. Reynolds said he believed there was a gay agenda that called for unsuccessful applicants to sue employers. Chris Gergich, a young professional, offered his perspective of Anchorage workplaces.
I'm here today to speak on behalf of those who can't speak for themselves because of the risk or the perceived risk that they may lose their jobs the next day. Tonight, I am risking my job to speak to you. I'm not out at work because of the fear of the negative retaliation. I cannot bring my loved ones to my work events or invite them to my home.
Not all the clergy have been against the ordinance. Bishop Michael Keyes of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America said while he wasn't speaking for all Lutheran churches in Anchorage,
I do represent the views and the social statements of the ELCA over the last, since 1970, when we began issues saying that the protection of gay and lesbian people is essential to a civil society and the rights of that society.
Waiting in line to enter the chambers, Reverend Glenn Clary, one of the pastors at the Anchorage Baptist Temple, said there was no way his church would accept the ordinance.
If you'll go get the mayor
to withdraw this. It might bring people to the table to talk about it, but to jam this thing down our throat in the way he is doing it is unfair to the voters of the city of Anchorage.
Today's public hearing is set to run from 4 until 10 o'clock tonight. As of last night, about 195 had spoken from a sign-up list of just under 540, and Chair Debbie Osiander has said she will not limit the number who can testify. The Baptist Temple is taking full advantage of that opportunity. In an email sent yesterday to his congregation, Pastor Jerry Prevost, the leader of the church, canceled this evening's services so his congregation can, quote, overwhelm them again Wednesday night, and to fight an ordinance he described as, quote, diseased and deviant homosexuals trying to force us to approve their lifestyle instead of just accepting them, end quote. A possible fourth assembly public hearing could occur on Monday. This is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The state broke ground today for the new prison at Point McKenzie. The Goose Creek Correctional Center is a $240 million project backed by both the state of Alaska and the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Patty Sullivan is borough spokeswoman.
The big news for us, of course, is the tremendous amount of jobs. It'll be up to 1,000 both indirect and direct jobs. So that means up to 700 construction jobs over 3 years. It's also projected to require for some of the corrections workers up to 272 new houses in the Point McKenzie area.
The prison construction is expected to provide some respite from a sluggish economy in the valley. At 435,000 square feet, it is the largest building construction project for the state in recent history. Borough Manager John Duffy helped start the project 7 years ago.
Means great things for Alaska. We're able to bring back 800 and so Alaskans who are incarcerated outside the state, so they'll be closer to their family members and their, you know, the Alaskan culture, and hopefully that will provide a better opportunity for rehabilitation and integration back into society.
Goose Creek Correctional Center is expected to be completed by 2012. For the sixth year in a row, the Anchorage School District is hosting a five-week summer school. But it's not just any summer school. It's an Indian education enrichment program. Students entering first through eighth grade are taught math, science, and reading, but all with a cultural emphasis. APRN's Susanna Caldwell has the story.
Music teacher Dorinda Congdon leads a group of 20 anxious first and second graders through a seal hunting dance.
Good job. You're killed around the puddle.
She leads them through the motions of paddling through the waves in their kayaks and placing their hands over their eyes to peer out, looking for seals. They paddle, pause to look, and then continue paddling until they raise their harpoons, ready to spear their seals. The song ends, and Congdon has the students line up at the door as they ready for the next of the seven classes they end up attending each day. Writing, reading, math, PE, music, and native languages are all part of the Indian Education Summer Enrichment Program 150 students are taking part in. Located at Willowa Elementary School, the program is so popular that there are over 100 students on the wait list. The program incorporates cultural themes into each subject. For example, they use topics like berry picking and salmon fishing to practice their deductive skills. Math teacher Janan Kaufman explains.
Yesterday, the younger kids tasted berries and wrote taste words, and today they're organizing that data, the words, in a way that makes sense to them. So we're not telling them how to organize it, they're organizing it, and each pair of students comes up with a unique way of organizing it and then describing their organization. And that's really what math is all about.
And by making the topics understandable, it keeps the students engaged.
The kids like the topics. They can relate to berries, they can relate to salmon. We look at what the relationship is between the land and these and the culture. And then we also have hands-on activities, and they can see a purpose for the activity, that it relates to the real world.
Youth development tutor Carrie Wood has been coordinating the program for 2 years. She says that the program not only keeps kids on track for the next school year, but gives them an experience they might have missed.
We like to think of it as a great place for kids to spend some summertime, do a little academics, have some fun, gain some more cultural activities. So those are the things that we don't always get to during the regular school year.
Congdon, who teaches at Taku Elementary, thinks teaching culture helps build their self-esteem, among other things.
One of the things that I feel is really important as a music teacher, like when I'm teaching throughout the school year, is bringing in the cultures of all of my students, because it's something that they can relate to. It's something they can teach their peers. They're successful. They have ownership. They have authority. And it gives them an opportunity to show their classmates who they are and their pride.
And beyond basic core subjects, the enrichment program also offers lessons in 3 different native languages. Students get a choice between Aleut, Tlingit, and Yupik. Lorena Warren teaches Yupik. Originally from Chivac, she wants kids to learn the basics, like hello, goodbye, colors, and numbers. After introducing the new vocabulary, Warren sits down with her students to read a story about 2 sisters who become trapped in quicksand and need to be saved.
When they fell into that quicksand, they both yelled, we fell into the quicksand.
Yupik class is the best, according to 8-year-olds Charity and Milana. They like that they're learning new words and are excited to show them off.
Kyoga. Kyoga. Shisto means I am fine. And Biwa means, yeah, and then Waka means hello.
And Kanchatikt, it means how are you?
Program coordinator Wood says that due to the demand, they hope to offer 2 sections of the summer school next year. The program runs through the first week of July. In Anchorage, I'm Susanna Caldwell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman in Unalaska, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Len Anderson in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel, Ellen Lockyer, and Susanna Caldwell from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Gooseberry Peter. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by EcoTrust, working to encourage economic development, healthy communities, and healthy salmon in the Copper River watershed. On the web at ecotrust.org/copper river. And by Pin Air, with 50 years of flying experience and offering charter service throughout Alaska and the United States. Details online at pinair.com. Want to break your tobacco addiction? Call the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line at 1-888-842-QUIT. Register for free Quit Line counseling and nicotine replacement patches. The combined counseling and patches increase your chances of quitting for good. Trained quit coaches will help you set a quit date and send you information. Free quit services are available to all Alaskans. This message is from the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.